Morning, everybody. I hope you don't go to sleep. Some of mine is going to be a little bit similar to Clint's, but kind of different also. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, Dr. Jeff Gore, Angus Catchott, Fred Musser, all of the other members of the Mid-South Entomology Working Group, which is Arkansas, Mississippi, Louisiana, Tennessee, and Missouri. You know, everybody in here who's food with cotton knows that historically bollworm, tobacco budworm have been major issues for us. Big pests, they feed on all the reproductive structures, and if you don't manage them, they will take you to the house. Historically, we manage these with foliar insecticides. This is just some application data from Mississippi from 1986 to the present. Prior to the introduction of BT cotton, foliar insecticides is how we manage bollworm, tobacco budworm. And this is, like I said, this is average. We were running all 4 to 5 applications on average in Mississippi, higher in some years, lower in others. Introduction of BT cotton drastically changed how we manage bollworm and tobacco budworm. If you use this technology to date, you basically don't have to worry about tobacco budworm. And because of that, we saw a reduction in insecticide applications for these pests. Saw a decline, the introduction of the dual gene products. We saw another decline. But recently, we've seen kind of an increase. Clint alluded to some of this. This is a little more detailed look. This is from 2008 to the present with number of applications and percent of the acres treated. During this period, we ranged from roughly 20% to nearly 80% of the acres receiving at least one application. Now, some of this is insurance, and I'm going to quote Angus a little bit. We've seen some situations where we're seeing damage more than we're accustomed to. And the growers and the consultants are nervous about this. And like Angus said, we're managing for the exceptions because you can't. A lot of these guys feel they can't afford to see if they're going to have a problem. So probably 2010 was a real big year. Jeff and myself there at Stonewall, we saw some things that we'd never seen before. This is, we actually found this doing some plant bug trials with drop claws and said, you know, we need to put some worm trials out. So we put, using chlorantraniliprole or Coragen at the time, applications out and looking at it compared to Bolgar 2 non-treated. And because we were finding so many larvae, we just kept sampling with a drop claw. And I'm going to tell you, when you're shaking 2 or 3 larvae out on a drop cloth, it gets your attention. And in looking at the sampling, where we didn't put any supplemental application out, we're ranging from 2.5 to 4.5 larvae per 5-row feet, with significantly less in the treated portions. And just looking at after we defoliated, damage was pretty easy to find, very typical of what we've seen in the past with non-BT. Walt came out and looked at these. And just to kind of make a point, we scratched around for about less than 10 minutes and came up with this pile of damaged bolls, and it's like, it's kind of eye-opening to me because I'd never really seen this much before. This some damaged boll counts. Significantly more damaged bolls where we didn't put the supplemental application out. And this translated into significant differences in yield of approximately 100 to 115 pounds. And because all of us there in the Mid-South talked to each other a good bit, everybody was seeing this, everybody's concerned. So we put a protocol together to look at this, at the benefits of oversprays to these dual gene cottons. The other thing that kind of concerned us, because we never really seen it before, we're seeing more square damage in these dual gene cottons than we're used to. This is, I'll kind of give some details on the protocol we came up. We had a non-VT variety as a comparison, and this is somewhat similar to what Clint was described earlier, Bolgar 2 and Wide Strike. Our foliar applications, we're looking primarily at LEP active materials only, Tracer and the two diamides, Belt and Prevathon. The other thing that we were kind of hearing rumors about is folks putting Prevathon out and seeing yield increases, and they weren't sure it was tied to insect control, thinking possibly some physiological impacts and some, well, we can look at this too. This is from 2012. We had a good bit of bollworm pressure, as illustrated by the non-treated non-BT. 70% square damage is pretty good. It's reminded me of the days back in the 80s and 90s before BT cotton, when we had resistant tobacco budworm. In non-BT cotton, the Belt and the Tracer did reduce square damage, but still 35% is not what I consider acceptable. About 12% in the Prevathon. In the dual gene cottons, very similar response whether you treated it or not, 4 or 5% square damage. You look at the second sampling date, this was kind of eye-opening to me. The non-treated had pretty low square damage because it didn't have any squares left. 30+% in the treated plots. No significant difference between anything, but still 7 to 15% square damage in dual gene cotton kind of gets your attention. And back to the square damage, this is some work Jeff did a number of years ago looking at the number of fruiting forms damaged on a per larval basis. Even with Bolgar 2, we see less than 1 square damage per bollworm larvae, less than 0.1 with Bolgar 2. And this is what we're accustomed to seeing, and this is why the square damage kind of got our attention. We typically see more boll damage in Bolgar 2 on a per larval basis compared to flowers and squares. Looking at the boll damage from 2012, again in the non-treated, non-BT, 70+% boll damage. No reductions, significant reductions with Belt or Tracer, 25% with Prevathon. In the dual genes, about 1 to 6% boll damage on this first sampling date. On the second sampling date, 10+% boll damage in the dual gene cotton. And this is an illustration of the exception that Angus was talking about that people are managing toward. They're managing populations and infestations to avoid this, but they don't know if this is going to get there or not. Again, lack of fruit in the non-treated non-BT. And pretty significant pressure. This did translate to yield differences, poor yields in the non-BT compared to the dual gene. If you look at yield for the Bolgar 2, looking at statistics, there was no statistical advantage of over-treating the Bolgar 2, but still, this is 100, 125 pounds. And the economics is what's going to dictate whether this is appropriate or not. Again, a little more differences in the with the Wide Strike, significant difference increases in yield with Prevathon compared to the non-treated. And as far as 2013, like Clint said, very little pressure and across the Mid-South. This is just from Stoneville. this kind of answers the question whether or not there's any physiological impacts. Basically, no damage or no pressure, very good yields, whether you treat it or not. So it's pretty much like we anticipated. It's based on pressure, whether or not, and insect control, whether or not these are going to be feasible to the growers. With that, I'm going to end, and if anybody's got any questions, I'll make an attempt to answer them. Yes, sir, Dr. Dennehy.
Thanks, sir. Good presentation.
Thank you.
What then is your take-home message for us in terms of the proportion of fields that you think will benefit from an insecticide spray? You say it's an exception. I'm trying to put a number on that in my head.
That is the ones that will benefit or the ones that are going to get it?
You said it.
That's very difficult. Very difficult to answer. Sometimes you're not going to know whether or not it's going to be beneficial till after the fact, if you have a comparison, and it's going to depend on pressure. I think it's going to depend on pressure and the conditions. So I can't give you an answer.
But is it 50%? You think maybe one out of two people, if they spray, would probably be better off?
From an economic standpoint, and this is a guess, if you have big pressure, I'm going to say 25 to 30%.
Okay.
Now, if you got big pressure, a lot of pressure, there's going to be more than that that's going to get an application. And one thing I want to mention that some of this, that I think we've masked some of this in the past. With our plant bug issues, we're tank mixing pyrethroids and OPs. I think in some cases, we're killing some of these worms that might have got to this. Don't know. So it's hard to separate what's for plant bugs, what's for worms, because you're getting a little activity. You may be going out for plant bugs, but you're getting some worm activity also.
Is the practical answer that you're putting out plant bug sprays and then pyrethroid for 1 to 2 times on these food technologies is a pretty good bet?
Some of these are going out more than 1 or 2 times because we're having the tank mix to get the level of plant bug control that we want. I think it's helping us by adding these pyrethroids in, and it's almost become an automatic practice when we have these big plant bug infestations, and it's kind of, they're not thinking about worms. The consultants are, if they've got worms and plant bugs, a lot of plant bugs, more than likely they're putting the two together. Yes, sir, Walt. Oh, yeah.
The population pressure and the technology.
And I agree with you. We're talking about twin link, Bogart 2, wide stripe. These varieties, you almost have, to some degree, you almost have to treat them as individuals because they act differently, different events, I'm not going to get into the genetics part. I'm not smart enough for that. But, I mean, we make generalizations, and it's generally not appropriate to do that. Well, thank you all very much.